geek. Talking baseball every week. Cause the D-Man and the Geek.
And welcome to Gleaming and the Geek. It goes to 11 episode. I'm John Bowles
of
Twins Daily. With me, Aaron Gleaming of the Athletic.
That's a reference, John, that is too old for me. I mean, I know what it is, but it's before my time.
I know. Has Dan Hayes must have used that like half a dozen times yesterday.
Oh, you think I listened to Dan Hayes at this point? Like my ears.
You were in the press box with Dan Hayes. Yeah, well.
Do you know?
I know you don't get an option other than the list of Dan Hayes. Dan Hayes loves 80s movies. There's just no chance he did not reference right. It goes to 11.
Nigel. You know how like, yeah, it's from Spinal Tap, in case anybody under the age of 75 doesn't know that. You know how like evolution, I know some people don't believe in evolution. I'm one of those weirdos who believes in evolution. So I'll just say this, but that's preface it by saying that. Like you, over the course of decades and centuries and millennia, whatever, things adjust to their environment.
Sure. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I've got a thing where my left ear is now closed up. From the hours of like 6:40 to 10 p.m. on nights in the summer.
And you pretend it's Dan as opposed to the Duchess.
Well, not she sits on my right usually, on the couch. But Dan's always on my left, so yeah.
Okay,
but,
all right. Okay.
Well, that was just so you know, that was John saying that, that last
so
joke, not me.
So we're clear, yeah.
Yeah. Yes, we are recording this Saturday morning. I'm heading to Target Field as soon as we're done recording this because they're playing again against the Red Sox. So by the time most people listen to this, the streak will either be more than 11 games or over.
Yeah, it's a good point.
But in this exact moment in time, it's for the next at least 5 hours.
Yeah,
it goes to 11. So, and you're back in America too.
I am back in America, but we're still doing a Zoom because it's virtually impossible to get into my condo this weekend.
Yeah, they've locked down John's building, basically, from the inside. Like, weird, I don't know. Maximum security, but they don't want people coming in.
That's about right.
You can leave. Or maybe it's just me. They're sick of me. I got to be. Nobody who doesn't live in that building is there more than me. Maybe the mailman. That's got to be about it, right?
That's about right. Yeah.
I do. I know, like, people. I say hi to people. Like, people must think I live there because I'm there, like, 3 days a week usually. I walk by people in the hall. They're like, hey, man, how's it going?
Right.
If they ever say to me, where do you live? I'm going to say, like, 13th floor. Because is there a 13th floor? I don't know.
Yeah, there is. Yeah.
So they've won 11 in a row. News break. I looked this morning, you know, because they've moved up from fourth to third in the division by winning 11 in a row, which is a little underwhelming. However, they were eight or eight and a half games out of first place, and now they're a game and a half out of first place.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, the real difference. And then you look bigger picture at, like, you know, Fangraphs projects playoff odds when this thing, before this thing started, when they were 7-13, they were 34% to make the playoffs, which actually is not that bad when you're 7-13. That's still a pretty decent rate.
Right.
11 wins in a row later, they are 72% to make the playoffs. Now, that includes wild card and the division. And that the interesting thing there to me is that's with the AL Central being vastly stronger than anybody would have ever predicted at this point of the season.
Or having one team that's vastly worse than anybody could have anticipated.
They're playing at a 90-win pace outside the division. Those four teams, the non-White Sox teams.
Okay.
They played at like a 12-win pace last year outside the division, John. It's the complete turnaround. I think they have the third best record of any division outside of their own division. Not, you know, if you're actually just looking at the competitive teams as opposed to the White Sox who lost again, got shut out again last night. But I also looked
they're four games above 500 or something like that all told.
But I don't care about the White Sox. I'm talking about the four teams that are trying to play baseball in 2024. I'm saying they're playing at a 90-win pace outside of the Central, removing the White Sox from the equation. But yeah, obviously the White Sox pad the – but, I mean, I know I'm not a math major or anything, but the division's always going to play 500 against itself. So that part, you know.
Right.
I looked at the history – this is tied now for the third longest winning streak in Twins history with 06 and 03, I want to say. And then the two longer ones – again, as of this recording, I think either 12 or a 13 gamer in 1980, which that team stunk, which is funny.
Right.
Like 1980, that was not a winning team. That was a below 500 team. I think they lost 85 games, something like that.
Is that that's also the year that what's his name had the hit streak? Landro? Was it Kenny Landro had the hit streak? Whatever.
That was back when you were watching Spinal Tap and I wasn't born yet, Johnson.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
and then the long winning streak that everyone always cites is 91, June of 91, where they were just kind of, I don't know, 500-ish or something like that. And then they won 15 in a row. That's the one people always point to. And not only did they win 15 in a row, but I was looking yesterday because I was trying to fact check the thing that everyone brings up, which is, yeah, they've won 10 in a row or now 11 in a row, but they've only beaten the White Sox and the Angels. You know, it's not like a 91 streak. And then I looked at the 91 streak. They 7 of the 15 wins came against the worst team in baseball, Cleveland, which lost 105 games.
Yeah.
And only 2 of the 15 wins came against the team that had a winning record. Or, and that was an 82 and
exactly right. It was 82 and 80 Royals, right? Yep. Yeah, it was, and I mean, so, and the other 13 games came. I think the best of the other teams they beat was like the Yankees were like 71 and 91. Like all three of those teams that they racked up all those wins against were bad teams.
Right. 13 of their 15 straight wins in 1991 came against teams that lost at least 91 games. Okay, so, you know, you can compare whether you think this year's streak schedule was easier or not, but. You know, this gets to something that we talked about on the Patreon after we were done doing our 40-minute rant on the television situation, which got rave reviews from many subscribers.
Different kind of review, different kind of rave.
Different,
reviews. Yeah, some positive,
slightly
some negative,
different reaction when I walked into Target Field. And what I learned is, and this is, I suppose, a nice way to something to take from that, based on my interactions with Twins employees at Target Field yesterday. A lot of people listen to the Patreon.
Sure.
So thanks for that, guys. I'll set aside what you thought of it and just
If you want to be an insider, just much like several Twins employees are, you can also join the Patreon, patreon.com/Gleeman, where we immediately react to news like, oh, Byron Buxton is hurt and the Twins are no longer on TV.
Yes. So we'll talk about that. I don't know that I can recreate the emotion of that rant, but who knows?
I think we had a pretty good shot at it, to be honest.
It's tougher at 9 a.m, I think.
It is tougher. You're right.
But I'll give it the college try. So I have a few more numbers on the 11 gamer. It's a little weird because it's either going to be 12 or 0 by the time people listen to this, but whatever. We'll sit in this moment. Sure, it's a fun moment. 11 in a row. They beat the Red Sox, close back and forth pitchers duel. And then they break through in the 7th. Chris Paddock looked great. Which he's now looked great in 2 of the last 3 starts, but the middle one against the Angels was, I thought, his least impressive start of the whole season from like a stuff standpoint. He had pitched worse than that in terms of giving up runs.
Oh, for sure.
But like he was 91, 92 miles an hour in that, and I was like, this is bad. But he was back very good last night. Slider looked good, which is a new pitch for him. Yeah. He basically didn't throw changeups, and he said post-game, that's been my best pitch for my whole career, but their lineup is really good against changeups. So I just talked to Ryan Jeffers before the game, and we did our homework and basically said, what if we just don't throw them any changeups? They're definitely expecting to hit changeups, and he looked fantastic stuff-wise, results-wise, all that. So that was good to see. The sausage mania, we'll call it, has like taken over to absurd degrees, and I don't want to like ruin anybody's good time, but I feel like the players are sick of it now.
I felt like as soon as everybody started talking about the sausage, they quit hitting. By the way, they kept winning games, so I don't want to downplay it, but they quit hitting versus the White Sox as soon as that happened, it seemed like.
I think what's happened now is, as with many things, it was an impromptu little thing that could have potentially just been behind the scenes, but people started to notice, and obviously on television. Then it became much bigger. They were getting sort of national media attention. Everybody was writing articles and doing stories, which is great for a team like the Twins when it's positive. And then now they're like, we can kind of be, although they were all wearing shirts and stuff yesterday that got shipped to the clubhouse. But the sausage itself now is being kept in a cooler away from the, in the coach's locker room, like away from the players. And they only like take it out of that right before the first pitch, because they're trying to limit the amount of handling by the players, I think.
Sure.
But what's happened now, I think, is, you know, the baseball side, they're still doing it, but, you know, whatever. But the business side of the Twins and the PR side of the Twins has now latched onto this thing with, you know, their mightiest grip, because they think they can turn it into T-shirts and ad sales and sponsorships and all that stuff. And there was a flag I saw that somebody brought in and they were waving. And it's like, okay, we might be a little much. I'm very curious to see if slash when they do lose a game. I assume that will happen at some point. Maybe not. Be a hell of a story.
Right.
if they just go, all right, the sausage served us well, but now that the winning streak is over, we're going to throw this, you know, rotten piece of, you know, mush together flesh. We're going to throw it away and move on to something, different. But
it reminds me of Seinfeld, where they'd go, hello.
Yes, you know, about the woman's belly button.
Yeah, exactly. Right, exactly. Yeah. And then there's someone like, are we doing this anymore? I'm like, no, that's done. Yeah, that's done. And the players are all like, yeah, the sausage thing. That was fun. It was fun to throw sausage.
I don't want
to
act like
a...
Right. I don't want to act like they were mocking it or anything. I mean, they were all wearing T-shirts and they're still doing it. And I mean, as long as they're winning, you're into it.
Right.
I just mean, reading between the lines, I got the sense like the energy surrounding this bit might be fading a bit. But I don't know that the Twins are going to let that happen, because they probably sold this thing to Eats Sausage Companies or whatever.
Well, they're looking for any positive coverage they can get in the middle of their 11-game winning streak right now.
That's right. So here's a few numbers on the 11-game winning streak. During the 11 wins, the lineup has scored 7.4 runs per game, which is essentially not quite double, but you know, almost double what like a average offense would score this year in Major League Baseball, because offense is pretty low across the league. They've scored 5 or more runs in 10 of the 11 games, which is amazing. I know you were like, well, the offense has stopped hitting. They've scored 5 or more runs in all but one of the games.
It's true.
And in that game, they scored 3. Yeah. During the 11 games collectively, they've hit .313 with a .910 OPS. Now, keep in mind, that's good in any context, obviously. Right. But the league as a whole is batting like .230-something this year.
Right.
And the league OPS is in the 600s. So if you're hitting .313 with a .910 OPS, you're doing some real mashing. And then on the pitching side, they've allowed 3.5 runs per game. Now, the interesting part of that, that's good, obviously. I mean, over the course of a season, that would probably lead the league in pitching. But it's not good to the extent that 7.4 runs per game is on the offensive end. I mean, 3.5 runs per game is maybe like a half run or a run below what an average-ish pitching staff, whereas 7.4 is like 3 or 4 runs higher than an average lineup. So I think just in general, that would tell you what we kind of know. But the pitching's been good. But the offense has been pretty incredible. It has carried it. And the pitching, they haven't allowed like 2 or 3, 0, 1, 2, 3 runs that often. But what's happened is they've allowed 5 or fewer in all 11 games. They haven't had any blowups where they allow 8 runs, 9 runs, where you can kind of break the streak. And Paddock said it last night. We were asking him, you know, how the streak is and how the vibes are. And he was like, I'm not going to be the guy to break the streak. Now it's Pablo's turn. Like, it'll be on him if it's broken. So I think the pitching staff, while they haven't been the driving force necessarily, although they've pitched really well, I think they've kind of viewed it as a personal challenge to not be the guy who has the clunker that ends it, because that's what can end it. I mean, it can end with just a hard-fought one-run loss or something. But at some point, a pitcher just goes out there and gives up like 7 runs, and it's like, oh, well, we lost that game.
Yeah,
we saw a lot of earlier in the season.
We were at the ballpark yesterday, and one of the things we were there early. And so one of the things I always like seeing is like sort of the league leaders in various statistical categories, like kind of thing, the standard fare that's on at a ballpark early when a game, before a game starts. I was surprised at how few Twins are anywhere near that on the pitching side. Like Joe Mays was like 7th overall in the American League. Joe Ryan. Jesus.
I almost let you keep it, but then I thought people might think I'm losing.
Joe Ryan
also
was like 7th overall in strikeouts. That was about it. Like they're just, and then I was like, this has got to be one of the top, you know, pitching staffs in the majors. And I take a look, like just runs against per game, they're very middle of the road. They're actually better. Yeah. It's scoring runs overall right now than they are in pitching, which is
that's all because of the 11 games, though. I mean, that wasn't the case when this started, but the pitching staff has been good during the 11-game winning streak, and the lineup has been the best in baseball by far. I mean, like, that's spectacular. Right. So, yeah, it's interesting. I think also, to your point, you know, to the extent that the pitching staff has been good, it's been the bullpen, not the rotation for the most part. I mean, the rotation is, I bet, below average in ERA, where the bullpen's like top three, I think, or it was a couple days ago when I looked. So,
and I know part of that's driven by a couple of real big clunkers, you know, the Paddock one and the Oberthaunt one and so on. But, you know, every team has some clunkers. So,
well, right. And when those clunkers lead to an automatic loss, essentially,
right? Yeah.
I'm less willing to kind of brush them aside. Like when you look at a bullpen and you go, well, the bullpen's been mediocre, but if you take out a couple of these blowups,
sure,
well, those blowups sometimes mean giving up a 2-run homer.
Right.
And so I'm more willing to go, okay, well, we can kind of look past that. But when the ones you're trying to kind of separate out are, you know, Louis Varlin giving up 7 runs,
sure, right,
it's like, well, you can't separate. That was a loss. So,
right.
You know, and that's kind of what I was getting at with the performance of the rotation during the streak, which is they've had some really good outings. Paddock's had a couple of really good outings too, or within that. But for the most part, it's been more just sort of managing, keeping you in the game long enough for the hitting to break through, which yesterday was a pretty good example of that, which it's 1-0. Paddock's pitching great. Up, they got 4 runs in the 7th, and now they got some breathing room a little bit, which they needed because they gave up a couple of runs there.
Right.
Cole
well, Paddock, Ober, and Lopez all have ERAs over 4.5. Like, it's...
Right.
I'm actually... in my mind, they've pitched better than that, but, you know, so far... That's not really the case.
I mean, I think Ober has definitely pitched better than that. Because Ober is we were just talking about. He gave up 8 runs in his first start.
Right.
He's got a 1-something ERA since that. Right. Now, the 8 runs in the first start, they lost because of that. So I'm not saying you can't count that. Whereas I think Paddock has been more up and down, and Lopez of late has struggled a little. So I'm curious to see how he pitches today, although he'll probably be pitching or have already finished pitching by the time people listen to this. So there was also some news. There's been a lot of news since we last did a free show because John's been in Japan and Korea and back to Japan. And so
I do want to address that real quick. We had a couple of people asking, are you guys cutting down on the free podcast? Well, we are, but partly that's because I've been
traveling
a lot. That's right. Yeah. So
subscribe to the Patreon.
Yeah.
You don't have to. We can still be friends if you don't.
Right.
But if you find yourself wanting more episodes, we are doing more episodes.
We will be back to mostly a weekly schedule here in the near future, up until the point where probably beginning of June I'll be traveling again. So,
yeah, blame John. I don't go anywhere. I don't even want to go to games anymore.
No, you're right.
Yeah. But more recently than 2 weeks, some returns from the injured list, which is Correa and Joan Duran, which is great. Duran closed it out last night, struck out 2 of 3 batters he faced, got up to like 102, 102.5, I think, on the velocity, which isn't quite peak Duran, but close enough.
Yep.
Correa hasn't had a huge impact yet. He actually made an error last night, which was uncharacteristic. But of course, because this is the Twins, you get 2 of your stars back and immediately lose 2 key guys to the injured list. So Buxton, people probably saw or not, I guess. Was Comcast canceled? Before that game?
That was Tuesday. We were able to watch Buxton leave the game, I think.
That was your last memory of the Twins for 2024.
Right. Yeah.
Perhaps fitting. He was running on 3-2, and he did it 3 times. And apparently the first time, he felt fine. The second time, he was like, oh, my knee's a little sore. That's weird. And then the third time, he's like, oh, my leg's going to fall off. So he came out of the game, actually got caught stealing for the second time this season, ruining his all-time great caught stealing percentage, which was literally the best in baseball, except now he's been caught twice on his last 2 attempts, but that seems secondary. But he, relatively good news on him yesterday from Derek Falvey, who gave a pregame update to everybody. It's inflammation in the surgically repaired right knee. Obviously, that's not good in and of itself, but I think the reaction that I had, and probably many people watching, and probably even Buxton at that point, when he feels pain running to the base, he probably thought, oh, here we go again. I tore something that knees back to being a surgery situation, whatever. I think it's not to downplay inflammation, and especially when he's had multiple surgeries on that knee in the last couple of years, I'm sure, I have no doubt it's very painful, but they do seem to indicate that it could be a minimum or close to minimum stay on the IL, which, yeah, you know, the, I'll the, always take the over with Buxton in terms of how many days he'll miss.
Right.
But, you know, realistically, if he's back in 3 weeks, that would be a pretty good outcome, I think. It's not the end of the world.
The timing of all the IL moves yesterday was telling in a lot of ways, that the fact that they made one move early in the day and then we're kind of like, Buxton's not been put on the IL yet? That's weird. And Austin Martin is in the lineup playing second base. At,
so I said to Falvey, so Falvey met with the media outside the clubhouse like, I don't know, 3:30 yesterday, something like that, before the game, to give a Buxton update. He also gave a Topa update, which I can give people. And he answered questions and all that. And then when he said something, somebody asked him about Martin, you know, the role he'll play. And he talked about that. We can get into that in a second too. And then I said something like, oh, so he's not playing second base today for the Saints, because he was in the lineup
right,
over there.
Yeah, right.
And Falvey goes, no, he's not. I said, I thought second base was a nice touch just in terms of keeping everyone off the track. And he goes, oh, that's Toby Gardenhire. I didn't do that. He's like, I'm not really aware of, even on a daily basis, what position he's playing. But I did think that was a real commitment to the bit of keeping it a mystery, whether Austin Martin, he played left field the day that I thought they were going to pull him from the lineup when Buxton got hurt, and then was scheduled to bat, I think, leadoff and play second base yesterday until about, I don't know, 4 o'clock, basically, when canceled that lineup. And then I'll say this to Austin Martin. He got to Target Field in about a half hour,
of course,
I would say.
Green line runs every 5-10 minutes from DHS.
He came walking in with his equipment bag and everything, and everyone was like, hey, you're back. Because he only played, I think, 2 or 3 games for the Saints.
Right.
So he's back. We can talk a little bit in a moment about what the plan is to fill in for Buxton. But then the other injury, which I think in a lot of ways is
also real late yesterday.
Yeah.
Announcement.
Yeah. I talked to Brock Stewart just casually before I knew he was going on the IL, and he gave no indication that he was going on the IL, which is interesting. But he was shut down with right shoulder
tendonitis.
Inflammation, something like that.
Yeah.
The sense with him, I mean, look, he was shut down for about 2.5 months last year with an elbow issue. And he has a lengthy, lengthy history of injuries, unfortunately. I mean, that's how he was available to the Twins. When they signed him to a minor league deal like 3 years ago, they signed him to a 2-year minor league deal because he was like midway through recovery from Tommy John surgery.
Right.
And so it was like a multi-year kind of, we'll help you recover and then hopefully we'll get something out of you. He's been obviously above and beyond any sort of the most optimal. I mean, it's a 100th percentile outcome from a minor league signing of Brock Stewart, but the history of his arm problems will loom a little bit over anything. He was shut down last year and ended up missing closer to 3 months than I think they wanted, maybe a month at the time. And so now it's, you know, everybody's saying this is precautionary. He had actually been pitching through a little bit of soreness for the past week or so. And you could see that in his usage, like they avoided using him back to back or even 2 out of 3, a couple of times. Then he gives up the homer, which is like the first homer he'd allowed in, I don't know, a year or something like that. And then goes on the IL. I think the sense with him, and again, who knows, but is that this is more precautionary and like, you know, it's early. Let's get this to calm down so that we're not. I mean, actually, Falvey used this phrasing about Buxton and Stewart. He said, if we can get this figured out now, we don't have to play from behind all season with it.
Right.
And I think that's an interesting way to view it. It's like, could these guys keep playing? Yes. Could Stewart pitch effectively through this? And maybe it's not a bigger issue at any point, and it just sort of resolves itself. And maybe we're a little careful with him and back to backs and stuff. Absolutely. But it also could get worse, and it's the same for Buxton. And then all of a sudden you need a longer IL stint, or it's something that never gets right all season. And so, you know, not that you can give away wins here, even when you're on an 11-game winning streak. But I do like that overall, I don't know, approach to this stuff early in the season.
This isn't late September and you're in the middle of a battle of a race right here. Like the similar, I mean, everybody likes to say, you know, win in April is the same as a win in September. Well, I mean, that's kind of true. But it's actually probably not true. I mean, it's similar to like a run in the first inning is the same as a run in the eighth. No, I mean, they can have a vastly different impact on the game, just like they can have a vastly different impact on the season. You might not need that win in September, or you might need that win very much in September, much more than you need it.
Well, and then the other part of that is, you know, if you win enough games, you're going to make the playoffs, at which point it does you no good, as unfortunately we've seen from some past wins playoff runs. If three of your key guys are hurt, it does you no good how long they were healthy in the regular season. I mean, they did to get you to that point, but now the playoffs start, you want guys to be as close to full strength as they can be. I mean, we saw that with Buxton last year. He was out, whereas Stewart kind of made his way back right before the playoffs last year, and maybe wasn't 100%, but was pretty close to that. So they initially, speaking of Austin Martin, by the way, they initially chose to keep, when Correa came back about a week ago or whatever it is, they initially, I mean, the choice, we talked about this on the Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/Gleeman, sign up for that. We kind of debated, because it was either going to be Miranda or Martin who got sent out, because they had options, they didn't have a full role, they're rookies essentially, or young guys, and we kind of debated the pros and cons of each one. They ended up keeping Miranda and sending down Martin when they activated Correa, which I think is reasonable given how well Miranda was hitting. And then, you know, 36 hours later, 48, I don't know how many it was, maybe 72 hours later, I guess, Martin's back, and now he's in position to have a big role too. So this sort of stuff, unfortunately, with injuries, it solves itself, or it, you can never have too much depth, basically.
Yeah, that's right.
And now there's a chance for Miranda and Martin to, you know, have an extended run here, get a little runway. You'd like it to come in different circumstances, but maybe we'll talk a little bit about more about their roles. But first, talk about our first couple of sponsors here.
Yes, we
our
do.
First
sponsor, Game Time. Yeah, you get back in town from Tokyo. What do you want to do? You want to go to the game, and it could not be easier if you are using the Game Time app. First of all, it's not a website. It's an app. So go download it for your phone so you're ready to go. Then as you're walking to the game, easy to find tickets, and tickets that are, frankly, much cheaper than you're going to find even if you walk up to the gate and buy them from the Twins, because, you know, they're dealing with resold tickets a lot of the time, tickets that are, they can either be hard to find tickets or, you know, really, really cheap tickets. And in this case, yesterday and early in the Twin season, you will find really cheap tickets to Target Field using the Game Time app.
Yes, and you can download, take the guesswork out of buying MLB tickets with Game Time, download the Game Time app, create an account, and use the code Gleeman for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply, but create an account, redeem the code Gleeman, G-L-E-E-M-A-N, for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last-minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. Our second sponsor is a Harry's. Longtime sponsor, Harry's Razors.
Let me give you a quick history lesson, Mr. Gleeman. I don't know if you're even old enough to remember this. Like, the first time I remember there being like two blades on a razor was like the mid-80s, or maybe even the late 80s. And, you know, for years, 20 years, the established razor community would just, you know, put out a new blade, add a blade to the razor like every 5 years. And every time they did that, the price went up and the shave got a little bit better. Except once they got to like four or five blades, then they couldn't do that anymore. And the razor companies were like, what do we do now? Like, how do we continue making our product better? And somebody probably said we could, you know, drop the price. And everybody had a good laugh at that, right? And then
that person was a pariah
he knew what he knew the joke he was making. Everybody had a good laugh, and they said, "Well, just table it for 4 or 5 years." Well, during those 4 or 5 years that they tabled it, they did everything. Harry's Razors came along and was like, "How about, you know, since it doesn't really matter if we add like a sixth or a seventh blade to the razor, we make the whole thing better by like, oh, dropping the price half, and you don't have to go to the store to get it. And it just gets shipped to you in this amazing packaging. And you still get the five great blades from a, you know, German factory that, that you've got in the past." And ever since then, that's why Harry's Razors is, if you're behind the curve at this point, if you are not using Harry's Razors.
Yes. And if you'd like to give them a try, you can get the trial set, which has a $13 value. You can get it for only $3 by going to Harry's, H-A-R-R-Y-S, harrys.com/Gleeman. Here's what you get. You get the five-blade razor with the weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel
for showing
cover.
Shave gel.
You know. Yeah, that too. That's an extra charge. You get all that for $3. So you can getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. That's get true. Started with the $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/gleeman. That's harrys.com/gleeman. Okay.
There was one other injury update you mentioned that we got, but I want to hear it.
Oh, Topa.
Topa thing.
Basically, so he pitched again last night for the Saints.
Okay.
Louis Varland had a great start, 7 shutout innings.
I saw that.
8 strikeouts, no walks, good velocity, threw a lot of changeups. And then Topa came in and struck out a couple of guys. I think the feeling with Topa is that, like, his knee's now okay, but he's not where they want in terms of, like, full strength. Like, I mean, he didn't really have a full spring training. Then he shut down for about a month. So I think he was, like, 92.5 average last night with the fastball.
There's some concern about his velocity, right?
Yeah, 91 or so in the previous outing. You know, he's usually 94, 95. So I think he probably will make one or two more rehab outings before getting called back up. But, you know, he's performed okay. I mean, he's gotten plenty of swings and misses and stuff against AAA hitters. But I just think they're hesitant to call him up before his stuff is all the way back to where they need it to be. And I think that's how it should be with rehabbing guys. I mean, it's funny because, like, you know, some guys like Correa come back without a rehab. Kepler famously did that many times, but this time needed a rehab or agreed to a rehab. But with pitchers, it's much easier to determine, is this guy at full strength or kind of normal than it is with hitters. Like with hitters, you can watch them certainly, and you could time their running, and you could just look at the performance of their at-bats and stuff. But with pitchers, it's as simple as going, well, this guy normally throws 95. He's throwing 92, so he's not ready yet. And I think that plays a part in Topa with them basically saying, I don't know, what's the rush? The bullpen looks pretty good. Now, they've lost Stewart, so they ended up calling Jorge Alcala back up from AAA. So he's going to be thrust back into some pretty big spots, I would guess. But you also have Duran back. So in a way, I guess Duran kind of replaces Stewart because you've been without Duran for the whole first 5 or 6 weeks of the season. So he'll be the closer. Jax will be the primary setup guy again, which was just like last year when Stewart was out. And then I think you'll probably see some mix and match with Ogard and Theobar from the left side. You'll get Alcala, Sands maybe from the right side. I mean, they kind of have a bullpen now where there's nobody bad in the bullpen.
Right.
Like, I mean, look, I know everyone's got their favorites and there's some guys who are struggling at times and all that, but we've lived through some Twins bullpens where I can tell you there's a lot of bad relievers who have shuffled in and out of key spots even for the Twins, and there isn't a bad guy in this bullpen right now. And so you can really, and even we called Funderburk from AAA. He's certainly usable in some medium leverage spots. Jay Jackson is certainly usable in some spots. So there's a lot of mixing and matching that you can do. Although I do expect the kind of late game situation to be a little bit more stable because they're not going to be mixing and matching with Duran as much as they did with, Stewart and Jax, where sometimes they would get in a spot where, you know, Stewart pitches the 7th, Jax pitches the 8th, and it's like, well, now we got to figure out somebody who's going to pitch the 9th. Well, they're going to work backward more from the 9th because they have Duran in that spot, especially coming back from injury. But yeah, we talked to him post game. First of all, I want to give a shout out to John Duran, who even until last year, but certainly when he was newly into the organization, spoke very little English and was rightfully, as I would be, not super comfortable doing interviews in English. Sure. And so use a translator. I've done probably 3 interviews with him this year where he sometimes will have Mauricio Ortiz, who's the Twins' new translator, next to him in case sometimes he'll be like, what does that word mean or something? The level of, it's almost like Eddie Julian's defense. Like the improvement made in a short time period by Duran in terms of being able to do interviews in English, I'm so impressed by that because I can't. I mean, I took 6 years of Hebrew and 3 years of Spanish, and I can't even like count to 10 in either of those, let alone conduct interviews on camera in my second or third language. So, he was in a good mood last night. I mean, his whole thing during the rehab from the oblique was, I'm bored. I'm just this. I don't like this. Like I want to throw. Like I want to. And so he was in a good mood talking about he's never been on a team anywhere that had streak like this. Yeah, it's probably true of a lot of guys. I mean, right. 11 games. I looked. So, like I said, it's the third longest streak in Twins history. There's only been since Target Field opened in 2010. So that's 14 full seasons ago. There's only been 35 streaks of 11 or more games, winning streaks by any team.
By any team. Okay.
Yes. So that's like 2.5 a season, basically, which right. makes sense to me. Like if I said to you, there's going to be one more team that'll have an 11 game streak or maybe two, that I think that roughly makes sense. What surprised me is then I looked at of those 35 teams to reach the point the Twins have, how many of them made the playoffs? Because you don't know when that happens. I mean, sure. that could happen in April. It could right. happen in September. You could be out of the play. Like we talked about the 1980 team. It didn't help them at all.
Right.
86% of the teams that have won at least 11 games in a row since 2010. So over the course of 14 seasons have made the playoffs. 86%. Now, a lot of those teams, and this is sort of true of the Twins, were favored to make the playoffs going into that season.
Of course.
Because those are generally good teams.
Right. Good teams when they win 11 right. games. Right. right.
But still, 86% is it's pretty good. Mm-hmm. And some of those years had fewer playoff spots than now. So,
okay. I mean, what we've seen in this is that this team is closer to what we thought they were going to be when the season started than what we saw in the 7-13. Like, even during the 7-13 streak, we were like, well, this, you know, still pretty good starting pitching, excellent bullpen, but boy, I just can't believe how many guys aren't hitting at all. Were we just totally wrong about this lineup? Is that possible? And I mean, 2 weeks ago, you and I were taking a look going like, yeah, they're 7-13 and yeah, they're better than this. Like they're going to hit better than this. But then we started taking a look at the lineup and we're like, you know, actually they've got enough injuries right now and enough guys who, you know, like Wallner's been sent down and, you know, this veteran's not producing and, you know, maybe Santana's washed up. I don't know. You know, enough things that we're like, I am starting to second guess myself on this lineup a little bit. And then I took a look at like last night's lineup and I was like, this is a great lineup.
Miranda was batting ninth.
Right.
Which.
Yeah. And the funny thing about saying that is if you just showed me the exact same lineup 2 weeks ago, I'd have been like, boy, a lot of question marks in that lineup. Like there's Larnach hitting sixth or seventh. Like, yeah, I'm not sure that, you know, we have right. that much faith in him. Well, you know, two weeks later, it's a totally different story.
They got Kepler back, who's made a huge right. impact in a short right. time yeah. since coming back. Yeah. They got Correa back now, which changes a lot versus what the shortstop third base situation was before. Willie Castro has just been on fire basically since replacing Correa at shortstop, and now he's playing center field.
Right.
He's hitting like, I don't know, 350 over 20 games or something like that. right. Ryan Jeffers right. has just been awesome pretty much all season. Yeah.
He hit third last night, and he should be hitting third. Like he just,
yes.
I can't believe we should be saying that about a catcher. Honestly, I think it's almost we're not covering that story enough, just how great he has been
yeah.
Out of the catcher position.
And then you mentioned Larnach, but also Miranda coming up from AAA and being sort of the next in line depth when Wallner fails or there's some injuries, and they've both come up and hit right away, you know, right. with big numbers right away. So, yeah, I mean, you still got some guys who are struggling, Vasquez, Santana, Farmer. Sure. But if you notice, those guys, maybe not so much Santana, but certainly Vasquez, I mean, for all the talk of who's starting more behind the plate, which is basically 50-50, which is kind of what we expected coming in, Jeffers right now has 55 more plate appearances
right.
than Vasquez because right. he's been used in the DH spot and he's been used higher in the lineup and he hasn't been pinch hit for, so that adds up to that. And you look at Farmer, who's been on the team the whole time, ranks, let's see, 2, 4, 6, 8, 8th, 9th in plate appearances. And that's certainly trending down now that right. they have, I mean, they're playing Miranda at third, who they don't even necessarily love defensively.
Right.
Instead of Farmer. So
we did not think we'd see Miranda at third, maybe at all.
So I asked Baldelli about this yesterday, basically.
Good.
I did not say to him, my podcast listeners are mad at me because I trusted you and said you would never play Miranda at third base again. Yeah, but I could have said that.
Yeah.
And he basically said, not surprisingly, but he said, you know, last year he just wasn't he couldn't throw.
Right. Yeah.
And so we thought, okay, his shoulder's problematic, but they didn't initially think it was that serious of a shoulder injury. He ended up needing surgery in October for it. But he was terrible at the plate. He struggled at AAA, right. But just from a defensive standpoint, he couldn't throw the ball to first base. And when he could, the next day he would have incredible shoulder pain. So it was like, we can't use him here. And I think they got it in their head like, okay, this guy was passable 2 years ago at third. If he can't throw, like, what are we even dealing with here? And his bat is the thing we really like, obviously. Right. So let's just focus on him at first base DH. Now he's healthy and he's throwing as well as he did before, which is not to say he has some rocket arm over there, but he's a passable third baseman with arm and range and all that stuff. And Royce Lewis being out and Farmer struggling created a, you know, a window opening for him, and he's jumped into it a little bit. And I think especially with Correa back at shortstop and increased confidence in Julian at second base, and yeah, for that matter, yeah, Santana at first base, who's been quite good, gives you a little bit more leeway to be like, all right, we can play Miranda for his bat at third. But truthfully, I don't think he's been bad at third. And Baldelli basically said, look,
yeah, I agree.
If he can throw again, I'm fine using him over there.
Right.
And that's so right. I think that's sort of what we're seeing. Now, Royce Lewis didn't get like a meaningful update, but we did chat with Royce Lewis. And Royce Lewis basically said, hey, what Falvey say? I love when players want us to pass along the information. His point was, look, until they tell me I can play in games, I'm frustrated. Because he doesn't like just the rehab process and the workouts and all that. But it does sound like, you know, within a month, I would say, which is a similar, I mean, he was initially given a 2 month timeline, and we're, right. What are we, 5 weeks into that, 4.5 weeks into that. So that's in some ways, now other injuries could obviously change this, but in some ways, that's the clock on Santana, in my opinion, because if Royce Lewis is back in 3 or 4 weeks,
yeah, that's interesting.
He's at third, and if Miranda is still playing reasonably well, which I think is a strong possibility, you can easily then say to him, all right, well, now you're going to go, you can play some third when Royce needs a day off, but you're going to be back in the first base DH mix if you've been hitting well. Well, who's the first base DH mix? It's Kirilloff, although he's been playing a lot of outfield, and it's Santana basically every day. So
right.
Santana has looked better over the streak than he did for the first 20
games.
Well, he caught
absolute fire in Anaheim.
Right. Right. I just think watching him, like whether the results are there or not in the short term, like the quality of the at-bat is closer to what was kind of expected of him based on his his history, where early on, he was swinging through a lot of pitches. He was swinging at some borderline pitches. That's not what I've seen from him over the last 15 years. Like, he's a guy who never swings at bad pitches. Right. And the one thing he had was very high contact skills for a, you know, guy who looks and hits like him. So I think he's gotten closer to that. Now, whether that means he's going to be an above average hitter from here on out, I don't know. That's been a while since he's been that. But it could mean he can hit 235 with 20 homers and a bunch of walks, which is, you know, that works basically. With Buxton out, you know, even if it's a few weeks, I think it sounds like, now this is skewed a little bit because Willie Castro looks like Willie Mays over the last 3 weeks. Right, so you're going to keep playing him while he's hitting 350. I mean, he's just been phenomenal. We saw this at times last year from him too. I mean, maybe he's just really good. It's certainly possible. But Baldelli was talking a little bit about, you know, how does he view center field for however long Buxton is out?
Sure.
And he basically said, look, Austin Martin's going to play, but Willie Castro's going to be in the lineup every day as long as he's hitting like this.
Right.
And the easiest spot to do that is center field, certainly. Right. So I would expect, I don't know, whether it's a 60-40 split or more or something like that, mostly Castro in center. You're going to see some Martin in center, but you're also going to see some Martin in left field, probably against left-handed pitchers. You might see him a little bit at second base too, which is fine. What's interesting, though, no mention whatsoever in the center field mix of Manuel Margot.
Yeah.
Which we talked a little bit about on a couple episodes ago, but it's so strange
on the
to
Patreon.
Me.
Yes, that's right.
To acquire a guy to essentially replace Michael A. Taylor in terms of role.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, Buxton was healthier this year, for at least April, than he was last year. So they knew Margot was also going to play a lot of corner outfield. Right. And actually,
Taylor would probably be playing a lot of corner if he was on the team too.
That's the thing, right? Yeah. We just didn't see that because Buxton was only a DH last year. But, you know, so it's not surprising when Buxton starts, I don't know, 20 of the first 30 games or something like that in center, that Margot wasn't going to play much center. But he has yet to start a game in center. And any discussion, even now with Buxton out of the picture for now, is about Martin and Castro, not about Margot. Right. And I don't know if he showed up to spring training and they looked at him and they thought, man, this guy is not a center fielder like we thought. Or I don't know if they just prefer to play him in a corner. But what I do know is, if you were going to acquire a backup outfielder after not re-signing Michael A. Taylor, because over money, basically, the whole premise behind choosing someone like Margot, who they got in a trade, it cost him $4 million, over a much better hitter was, well, Margot can play center field, and if Buxton goes down, which he has now, you need that. Like, it's great to have Tommy Pham or Adam Duvall or whatever corner bat who's got much better power numbers and 800 OPS type of guy. Well, it's great to have those guys when everyone's healthy, but when Buxton goes down, those guys are not going to be your idea of a regular center fielder. And so I agree with all that.
It was
an
insurance policy. I'm like, if Buxton goes down, we might need somebody to play center field 90 times this year, or maybe 120 times this year.
And I get that. That was the whole purpose of Taylor, and they needed all that and more from Taylor, and he gave it to him. So I got, you know, we discussed this endlessly at the time over the course of weeks, like what they needed to get an outfielder, a right-handed hitting outfielder, what type of guy, and those were the two choices, bigger corner bat or a more capable center fielder. They chose the more capable center fielder in terms of a lower offensive upside. But if you're not, they apparently don't believe in he's capable of playing center field anymore, or at least he's behind at least three guys and maybe more.
Has he started even a single game in center field?
No.
I don't think so.
And even mid-game, I think he's only come in once or maybe twice for like two or three innings. Right. Like, they've gone out of their way not to play him in center. And that's fine, because if you have Castro and Martin,
that's another thing that happened in that during that time is Martin, you know, looked good in spring training and has had a decent start to here.
Except I think part of the reason they called up Martin so quickly, basically immediately, to replace Royce Lewis is because they had decided in spring training he's a better center field option than Margot, which is interesting. I had no problem with the Margot acquisition given the role we thought they were filling with it and given the lack of resources that they needed to devote to it. But if I knew what I know now in terms of how they were actually going to use him, which is basically just a platoon left and right fielder, well, he wouldn't have even been on my list at that point, because that's a completely different type of skill set and role that you want there. But
Just up and down, like a lot of the moves they made this offseason in terms of like getting veterans to sort of stabilize the bench, things that we thought, you know, made some sense. They did it the previous offseason. It worked out well for them last year. And, you know, we thought that's not a bad strategy in terms of having the immediate backup be a veteran and then have, you know, the next guy up be a prospect that can actually come up and do something. I mean, a lot of those veterans, those moves just don't look like they're working. The Vasquez hasn't been particularly productive ever since they signed him 2 years ago. Carlos Santana, despite having a big kind of breakout weekend last weekend, is still hitting 184. And, you know, and Kyle Farmer, who you legitimately kind of overpaid to have out there, is also struggling too. So like, that's pretty much the whole bench.
Yeah, that's 20. Tossing Margot, and that's like $25 million worth of
underperforming veteran goodness. Yeah.
I would just tell people, and this is something that I wrote about a lot back in the day about the Terry Ryan regime, is the kind of cliche or the conventional wisdom that, well, you got to bring in the veterans because they just have a floor, an established floor. You know, they're not going to be terrible. You can't just turn everything over to unproven rookies and prospects, because what if they just fall flat on their face and they flop?
Right.
Well, that happens.
Yeah.
But veterans fall flat on their face and flop all the time too. So I had one thing. I don't know. I would say with Buxton, and again, this is me reading between the lines and, you know, body language and talking to a couple people behind the scenes a little bit about it. But I feel like their mentality with his injury situation has shifted in my mind a little bit to, it's not, they still want to be precautionary, and when he has some issue, they want to shut it down before it gets worse. But bigger picture, I no longer feel like they're saying to themselves, well, we have to preserve his upside. We have to sort of, keep him locked away and limit him to doing this and so that hopefully one day in the future, when we need it most, Superman will arrive and, you know, carry us or whatever. Right. Now I kind of feel like, because he wasn't all that great last year as a DH, and while he played more than expected early on this year, he didn't really produce offensively that great. He had an average-ish OPS or whatever, some good moments. But I almost feel like now their stance on it is, we'll be protective of him just in general with injuries. But when he's back, he's going to play.
Right.
And he's going to play till he can't play, and then we'll shut him down again. And, I mean, this is a forever shifting target, I guess, with him. And they try something, it doesn't work, they try something else. So maybe this is just the next approach on the list of things to try. But it's interesting to me because they're basically saying, you know, we got backup center fielders in place. We got Willie Castro, we got Austin Martin, we got, if we need it, Margot. When Buxton was healthy to start the season, he played a whole lot. He played 28 of the first 30 games, although he didn't start all those games.
Right.
They didn't really try to rest him during that. They didn't really try to give him, you know, one out of every three games off. And he played some DH, but not a ton. He certainly played a lot more than I ever would have expected.
I agree.
And I think that was because they basically said, now he's just a player. Like, he's not a guy to manage around. He's not. And unfortunately, that's been the case from his performance. And I'm not saying it's like a criticism of him, but I think now it's like, all right, well, he's gone for 3 weeks. Castro, next man up. Martin, next man up. And when he returns in 3 weeks, we'll play him, and we'll play him till he can't play, and then we'll shut him down, and then the backups will come in. And so, you know, it's out of necessity. But I just sense like a subtle shift in the way they kind of talk about his situation.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. It, you know, before they were concentrating so much on protecting him, and now it's more like, let's protect ourselves. You know, like
right.
What we really need is to have some backups at that position. That because we've, I mean, to some, I don't want to be too harsh about this, but yeah, they failed to figure out a way to keep him healthy. You know right. What I mean? Like that just hasn't been something that has worked. They've tried a number of different ways. They've tried being proactive about it. They've tried being reactive about it. They've tried, you know, having him be more careful when he's playing center field. Like,
right. It's possible there isn't a way.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Unfortunately.
Right.
So
and it, once you get to that point where it's like, maybe there just isn't a solution. Well, then the solution is, well, then let's play him when we've got him. You know what I mean?
We talked during the offseason. My approach with it would have been, coming into this season, would have been, he's not your starting center fielder. He's like your fourth outfielder. You want to put in place a starting center fielder, and then if he's healthy and he's producing, you can always find additional playing time for Byron Buxton.
Sure.
But the idea of kind of planning a roster or a lineup around him as your starter, I think no longer makes, you know, logical sense.
Right.
They didn't really do that. They certainly planned on him as the starting center fielder, but whether it was Margot, which hasn't worked out, or just the knowledge that, well, we have Willie Castro, who we believe in, and also we have Austin Martin basically knocking on the door to the majors. You know, they didn't quite do what I would have done in terms of trying to, like, re-sign Taylor and call him the center fielder. Although it's worth noting, Taylor hasn't been. He started off really hot, and he's been pretty bad since then. But the idea of, we can't have kind of traditional backups to Buxton because he's not a traditional situation. We have to have better backups. We have to have backups that aren't just a couple days a week or a couple weeks a year. We have to have backups that can be prepared to be starters. Right. And Castro has certainly played like that now for his whole Twins career. And I think Austin Martin is capable of that too. So they've kind of, in an end around type of way, they've come to the same place with that. They just didn't quite approach it head on. So I don't know. I mean, it can be a good thing too. I mean, Willie Castro has been super valuable for them this year, last year. I mean, he's been one of their better players both years. Right. And Austin Martin, I think if you give him a little bit of runway to be a semi-regular or regular, he might never go back to the minors. Like, I think he can be sort of a spark plug, high-end role player for years. And so maybe this is the opportunity. And by the time Buxton comes back, somebody else is hurt or some roster move can be made. And then you add Buxton to the mix and, you know, he's just part of the group at that point. So
I will be interested to see how much they play Martin versus Castro in center field. I mean, I certainly understood it yesterday. Martin wasn't even on the team when the lineup was created yesterday with Castro being in center field. But what we've seen is, you know, Martin had the majority of the starts in center field when Buxton wasn't there, the vast majority of the starts in center field when Buxton was, you know, sitting, even before he got hurt. But that was because Castro was needed in other places.
Exactly.
And now, now that you've got Miranda, you know, available at third base and Correa at shortstop and, you know, Farmer, you can safely plant on the bench for a while and just maybe save him for left-handers only. You know, maybe Castro ends up getting a lot of that run in center field.
I think he will. I mean, look, if he goes into a slump, it could change. But as long as he's producing offensively, I think realistically they view Martin as slightly better than Castro defensively, but not a big enough edge defensively over Castro that you would bench a guy hitting 350. Now you can find other spots to play Castro too, but
and I think while Castro is, you know, listed as a switch hitter, the truth is that I think they view him more, you know, stronger versus right-handed pitching as a left-handed hitter.
Right.
And, you know, since you're going to be facing a lot of right-handed pitchers, probably makes more sense to have the left-handed leaning guy be taking that spot in center field versus, you know, Martin the right-handed hitting.
Right. So talk a little bit about the bullpen. Duran is back. Like we said, Stewart is out. Alcala and Funderburk are back up in the majors, which I think is deserved just based on their performance. You know, Stewart, it cannot be undersold how good he's been with the Twins. I looked up, he's thrown 41 innings with the Twins in a Twins uniform.
Yeah.
0.66 ERA, 0.66 ERA, and 56 strikeouts in 41 innings.
Yeah.
I mean, that is like the upper limit.
When he
limits.
Gave up that home run, that was the second home run he's given up in his entire career with the Twins.
Right. I mean, that is as good as a pitcher can be.
Right.
You know, setting aside whether it's Mariano Rivera or a minor league signing like Stewart actually was, like that is as good a performance as you're ever going to get from a pitcher. But as we saw last year, the injury situation looms over him and the history looms with him. So they're going to be very careful. And you look, I mean, through 30 games, he only threw 13 innings in 30 games. Right. So that tells you they were already being very careful with him. And then the last week or so, they were very careful with him because I think his arm started hurting a little bit and then they shut him down. You know, you'd like to get Topa back in the mix here to kind of join the Sands and Jackson.
Yeah.
Group as a right-handed option. I mean, that's possible within the next week or so. He's probably going to make one or two more appearances for the Saints. And then the other thing is, through all this roster shuffling or bullpen shuffling that you mentioned earlier, Caleb Busley was up for about an hour, didn't pitch,
yeah, I know.
Went back down. Matt Bowman was up for, I don't know, 2 weeks, pitched like eight innings or something, looked decent. He actually got a few higher leverage spots just kind of out of necessity. But the problem with him, and we talked about it actually at the time when they called him up 2 weeks ago, it was somewhat surprising to me. They liked him and he was pitching pretty well for the Saints and he's got a track record in the majors, mostly with the Cardinals 3-4 years ago, but he doesn't have any options remaining. So you can't send him back to the minors. And we saw that play out, the effect of that pretty quickly, which they needed to send down an arm to activate, I think, Duran, I want to say. And they had already sent down Funderburk. I think I might be getting the timeline mixed up.
Yeah, you got the timeline mixed up on that. But I can't remember exactly who it was for. Yeah.
But they needed to send out an arm, and Bowman was really the most obvious choice. But the problem is you can't just send him back to AAA and stash him there. You had to DFA him, which exposes him to the waiver wire, and then the Diamondbacks came and basically jumped the waiver wire by offering the Twins the infamous cash considerations. And so they bought Matt Bowman. I know the Twins would have loved to have kept Bowman. I wonder if they would have done things slightly differently if they would have known precisely how the bullpen moves would have worked out.
Well, yeah, I mean, they called up Bowman when they were freaking out because they had a doubleheader versus Detroit and they'd used up the bullpen the day before.
The weird thing is he didn't pitch.
Right. Yeah. Well, what ended up happening is Simeon Wood Richardson ended up having a great start and, you know, threw six or seven innings and they were like, oh, and they had a comfortable lead, so they didn't have to worry about it. But they didn't know that when they called him up.
Exactly. But if you weren't planning to keep him for the longish haul, you know, you could have called up Busley.
Yeah, you're right.
Who, the difference with him, he came up and never even pitched, which was similar to Bowman's first three or 4 days with the Twins. The difference with him is he has a minor league option remaining, which means they sent him just back to St. Paul. They didn't have to risk exposing him to waivers. Again, I'm not sitting here saying, I mean, Bowman's like the 12th best reliever if you're including the Twins in AAA. So I'm not crying over it. He was a minor league signing. Right. But I do think as a, you know, sixth inning guy who throws strikes and gets ground balls, I think he's definitely a major league caliber reliever. In some years, I would have been very upset losing him. But now they got 10 guys who can kind of get the job done.
Well, they have enough guys right now that have options that it allows them to futz around a little bit with. So they can panic a little bit and call up, you know, about Bowsley, is that his name?
Buzzley. I think.
And send Funderburk down for 2 days. And then, you know, sure enough, he's back up, you know, two
or
days
Alcala.
Later. Or Alcala. Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. Who we Alcala should mention is back in the team and back.
I would expect him to get some pretty high leverage spots here, like in general.
Right.
Yeah. He pitched. He was sent down with a zero ERA, which I didn't think they really did him right. But and then pitched only 3 times in 3 weeks at AAA. So I think part of it, and we kind of speculated about this at the time, was like they felt like from a workload standpoint, he's still coming back from multiple injuries and stuff. So they wanted to kind of calm it down. He also had a kid, or his wife had a kid, 5 days ago or something. So he was on the paternity list for a little bit. But he's back, so I'm very curious to see how his usage pans out. But, yeah, the bullpen continues to look good. Now you've got Duran as sort of the hammer at the end that I think clarifies Jax's role now, too, to be the primary setup guy. But either way, you're still going to need one or two more guys.
Right.
You're probably going to need a lefty, either Okert or Theobar, and you're probably going to need one of these righties, which could be Alcala, to kind of step forward and pitch some sixth and seventh inning spots that matter a lot.
Because, well, especially because Theobar has not been looking particularly sharp as one of the seventh, eighth reliable guys, or seventh or eighth inning reliable guys. You know, so yeah, it looks like we're going to see. I mean, last night when Jax came in the seventh, and, you know, did a great job in the seventh inning. You know, we were kind of like, oh, yeah, that's right. We don't have Stewart here in the eighth. Like, we got Duran now for the ninth.
Right.
Who's pitching the eighth now? And, you know, fortunately, they scored 4 runs at the bottom of the seventh, and it almost didn't matter who came in to pitch the eighth. But
yes. By the way, which is an argument in favor of using your really good relievers in a 1-0 or a 1-run game in the sixth or the seventh, instead of holding them for the eighth or the ninth, because your advantage could grow and to the point that you wouldn't need to use them, or you could afford to use Cole Sands instead of Jax or something like that in those spots.
Come back to earth a little bit.
Let's talk about our last couple sponsors here.
Let's do that.
One of them is Chomps. I'll do my, I couldn't quite get it. Let's tell him. There we go. I'm back. I'm back, baby.
Oh, thank God.
Chomps.
I hate to hit for you to lose that.
Chomps is meat sticks. I'm gonna shed some light on something behind the scenes at Target Field. There are Chomps in the Twins clubhouse.
Yeah. You know where else there are some Chomps? In my pantry. Because I love having a meat stick like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Something like that. It's just something that I can get a little bit of protein and it's tasty. And you know, not a ton of calories, and you know, it's become a little bit of a hack. It's kind of a go-to afternoon snack for me. And Chomps has a tremendous number of different flavors that you can have. I like the taco ones, but I mean, really, there's something like 10 different flavors, and there are no bad ones. You're gonna do just
zero sugar, a lot of protein, low carb, all that stuff. 10 flavors, like you said. Right now, Chomps is offering us and our listeners 20% off your first order, and they'll give you free shipping when you go to Chomps, Chomps, chomps.com/Gleeman. Go to chomps.com/Gleeman to see all the delicious flavors and get 20% off your first order plus free shipping. That's chomps.com/Gleeman. Don't forget to use our code Gleeman, so they know we sent you. Our last sponsor,
Mother's Day is next week, and kids, if you are somebody that is trying to, if that's news to you, and you're still like, oh geez, I gotta get some flowers, or I don't know, what am I getting mom this year? You know, it's coming up. It's a week from Sunday. I will give a recommendation. Something I gave my mom 5 years ago, something like that, which was Storyworth. And is something that it became a bonding thing between her and I as her health eventually deteriorated and eventually she passed. But it was really nice to have, you know, basically once a week she would get an email from Storyworth asking her a question about her life. And you actually have some control over what those questions are. You can review them. You can come up with, you can put in your own questions if you want, that looks like they're coming from Storyworth. And then she would just reply to that. And she appreciated that because, you know, she had always said, like, she kind of wanted to document things about her life, but, you know, it's hard to paint a blank canvas. Like, her sitting right down at a computer and coming up with those stories was a difficult thing to do.
You need a push in the right direction, or right, a prompt to get you thinking about memories that you maybe didn't think about before. And then the beauty is, at the end of the year, it's almost like a autobiography in a way. Right. Like, you can actually get a physical copy of the kind of story of their life, or the stories that they put down. And then that can be a gift not only for them, but other family members too.
Yeah, right. That's right. So you can give dads, grandparents, I mean, for older sibling, you don't really know all that and well, you know.
I will say this specifically for our audience, if they're anything like me, it's a great last minute gift because it doesn't require shipping.
Exactly.
Yeah. It just emails right to them. So for all the moms in your life, you can give them a unique, heartfelt gift that you can cherish. Storyworth. Right now, you save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/Gleeman. That's storyworth.com/Gleeman and save $10 off your first purchase. All right. Well, we've come to the point in the podcast where John wants me to go on another rant about
if you're not up for it, if you don't have the energy for it, I'm happy to lean into this a little
bit. I'm up for it. I'm about to go to Target Field. And how many dirty looks can one man take in a weekend? But I'm up for it. Here's the thing. Ultimately, we talked about this on the Patreon a couple days ago, but my baseline goal for this show, and it was the same when I started blogging, and I know it's true for John too, the number one thing we're not going to do is bullshit Twins fans. And whether that gets us to be unliked by people in the organization, that's fine. You know, we're working, so far as you could call this work, for our audience, which is Twins fans,
right,
for the most part. And, you know, when I've always been like this in my life. Like, if I feel like people are getting jerked around, or I'm being jerked around, or bullied, or messed with, or, I don't know, pissed on, for lack of a better word. This is not very poetic of me. But my reaction is always kind of bigger than it should be a lot of times. And in this case, I think all those things are true, unfortunately, with the way this is being handled. You know, we did a 40-minute rant on this on the Patreon, but the basics are, you know, this television situation that's been playing out for 6 months now, basically longer than that, really, because we knew it was coming all season,
sure,
last season.
Yeah.
Every step along the way, it's gotten worse for Twins fans, I think. And they were promised things that were not delivered in terms of the end of blackouts and more availability and all that. And they were, the reason those were not delivered the way they were promised is because the Twins ultimately chose to take more money and return to the previous setup, which was the Bally Sports. After being free agents, they could have gone anywhere, theoretically. And I don't necessarily fault them for that. I think most organizations, and most people for that matter, are going to choose significantly more money than a lot less money, even if it's a worse situation for the, you know, your you know, customers, I guess. But my problem begins with also doing that and also lowering the payroll by $30
million. Right.
The timing of the whole thing, coming off the first playoff win in 20 years, I think was just horrendous. Couldn't have been worse in terms of, you know, just chopping off all your morale as it's growing. But then now the latest is they're back on Bally. People still can't stream them. You know, you've
right,
put yourself in golden handcuffs. You're not able to grow the audience because you needed that, whatever, 30 million back instead of who knows what they would have gotten streaming, less than that probably initially as a startup.
Yeah.
And now half those people can't even watch because now right. Comcast is arguing with or fighting with Bally Sports or right. Sinclair Diamond Sports, the conglomerate that owns them. So these two multi-billion dollar national conglomerates are arguing, and who gets screwed in that? Twins fans. And I'm just sick of it. I feel like every step along the way, the ones who get dumped on over yeah. and over and over again are Twins fans, and they're the ones with the least power, and they're the ones who, you know, are probably hurt most by this, like in terms of not having their favorite team to watch. And so, you know, we got into a lot of the details of why this is happening. It boils down to, you know, cable providers like Comcast pay a fee to each channel, a different fee depending on how popular the channel is.
Right.
You know, they might pay $12 a month to yeah. be able to broadcast ESPN. And I think right. Bally, it sounds like, was getting roughly $8 a month. Right. So they're arguing over that fee right now, but they're also within that arguing over how, like, the tiers or the packages that Bally would be offered in, because Comcast wants to make them sort of a special premium tier or a sports tier so that they can lower the price for people who aren't interested in that, right. but then upcharge the people who are interested in that. And that's just sort of the way of the world at this point. So I get that. But here's, and you know, I've heard from Twins officials now who push back on some of the things I've said and that we don't have the full story. And I love to hear information. I would have loved to hear it 3 months ago. It seems awfully convenient to all of a sudden be saying it now, but that is what it is. And the one thing I heard pretty consistently was, you know, we were free agents and we did make a choice to return to Bally Sports, but we were very much pushed in that direction by MLB itself. And I'm willing to believe that to some extent, but the reality is MLB is currently housing streaming broadcasts for the Rockies, the Diamondbacks, right. and the Padres.
And that's BS.
So the idea right. that they weren't equipped to do it for the Twins, or let's say the Twins and the Guardians and the Rangers, who right. found themselves in the same boat returning, you know.
Listen, Major League Baseball absolutely had some influence in sure. the situation, this thing. But primarily the influence that Major League Baseball had was, we don't want you signing a multi-year streaming deal. If you're going to sell, if you're going to sell streaming rights, it can be no more than a 1 year deal. Well, it's hard to shop a 1 year deal for that, right? So and if you end up offering something like if you end up taking the streaming on yourself, like some of these other teams, it's possible that Bally Sports North isn't willing to pay you the, you know, tens of millions of dollars for your TV sure. rights, because part of the deal that Bally was offering them is, we'll pay you tens of millions of dollars for TV rights, but we aren't going to compete against you on streaming.
Right.
We don't want that. Right. So, you know, if you want the money, you're going to have to restrict the streaming rights in market, and we're going to have to be your provider for TV. That's it. We're not going to compete against it. And that's a perfectly reasonable, you know, thing for Bally Sports to do. Right. But, you know, then just understand what you're doing. Then admit what you're doing. You're taking the tens of millions of dollars that you are receiving from Bally, right, to give up control, not just of your TV rights, but also of your streaming rights. And then when it all goes sideways, don't sit and complain about the fact that we don't have any control over this.
Right.
You, the thing you not only have control over it, you took the $30 million or whatever it was, and you put it in your pocket. You didn't even invest it back in the team. You didn't invest it back in the fans. So, I think it's crazy for them to be able to say, your point is well said, that, you know, it's the fans that are end up, they can't watch, they don't get any of the benefit of the Twins making tens of millions of dollars on the TV rights, because none of that money goes back into the team. Like,
right. And I think a lot of it boils, look, there's going to be gray areas here, and certainly the Twins are suggesting that they were pushed, and I'm willing to believe that to some extent, but ultimately they made a choice, and it's not as if they made a shocking choice. They chose money.
Right. Of course.
But they chose less money, you know, than they were getting. It's not like they chose a you know, an ideal situation.
Right.
And they chose to get back in bed with a partner that they didn't like in the first place. They were openly talking poorly right. about for months and months and months, and rightfully so. I mean, one thing you cannot suggest at all is that the Twins entered back into this agreement with Bally, not knowing how Bally does business and that Bally is in a tough situation in general in terms of, I mean, they were literally in bankruptcy court with them and still are. And so the idea that Comcast now is trying to play hardball with Bally cannot come as a complete shock to the Minnesota Twins. And ultimately what this comes down to for me is the idea that decisions the Twins have made have consequences. And they would argue that they've had negative consequences for the Twins, and I'm sure that's true. But one thing we know for certain is they have had negative consequences again and again in increasing amount for Twins fans.
Right.
And I'm just sick of that. Okay. And I'm sick of that. Then when your decisions that you make have negative consequences, you cannot turn around when you see the anger from the fans, which is rightful, justified.
Sure.
And go, can you believe like how bad the situation is? It really sucks right, for us, yeah, doesn't right, it? Yeah. It's like, who's this us crap? Like, you're why we're here.
You've got the tens of millions of dollars that you right. that you.
The other
out.
Thing right. that I just think, even setting aside the fan aspect in terms of how this is their point of view, which I think should be at the forefront here. So, but from a business standpoint, choosing, let's say, $30 million in the short term. And look, $30 million is a lot of money in right. a lot of situations, yeah, but it's not for a team that's worth $2 billion
right.
for a family that's worth $5 billion. I mean, this is just money. I mean, it's just right. it's play money, basically. And what you've now done in the process is you've had another season where only a fraction of your potential audience can see your product. Right. And even the people who started the season able to continue seeing your product, Comcast survivors, are now being crapped on to the point that some fraction of them are going to go, you know what, I'm sick of this. And so instead of taking the widest possible distribution, and maybe you lose another $15 million or another $20 million. And I know that's easy for me to say, but this money truly has no meaning in the context of how much money is involved here overall. They would have just had such a more impactful, long-term morale boost here by making it widely available. It still likely would have been available on cable subscriber subscriptions and DirecTV, because the Padres and the Diamondbacks and the Rockies have been able to carve out channels by negotiating with that. It would have been available to a much younger, newer, fresher audience via all the streaming platforms. Instead, you got an extra $20-something million, which, you didn't spend on payroll anyway. And now you've capped your audience at like maybe 20%. Of your potential right. audience?
10%.
Yeah, I mean, I heard some different numbers on that. Okay. But Comcast is a massive... Now, look, maybe this gets solved. Although, I don't... Based on just the conversations I had yesterday, I don't think it's imminent to being solved. And
First of all, it isn't just the Twins. This isn't just a Twins-related right. thing. This is all of Bally, all of their regional sports networks, all 15 of their networks or something.
But what separates
teams are impacted.
Right? What separates the Twins from, like, the Braves or the Tigers or whatever, or even the Guardians and the Rangers. The Twins were the ones who were free and clear of Bally.
Right. That's right.
Their contract was up. These other teams, 10 of the other teams, are in multi-year contract with Bally. So they had no choice but to make the best of the situation and continue with Bally.
That's right.
The Twins were out, and they were talking a big game right. about all the things they were going to do now that they were single. And now they've gone back to their, abusive ex. And now all their friends are like, this sucks for us now because we got to hang out with them still.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And they're like, yeah, I know, it's a weird spot for everyone. And their friends are like, what do you mean everyone? You did it.
Right.
There's my bad analogy of the week. Right. So if you want to hear a more emotional and lengthy rant from both of us, go listen to the last Patreon episode. But I'm a big believer in taking responsibility for things. And I'm not trying to take the moral high ground here, but when it's incredibly easy to connect dots from the way this situation has deteriorated, a direct connection to two decisions that were made by a team, I cannot stand by and let the team try to let itself off the hook for that.
Right.
I cannot stand by and have the team try to then place themselves in the same boat as fans and go, oh, this sucks, doesn't it? Sucks right. for us, huh?
Right.
It's right. like, there's no us. There's you and there's Comcast and there's Bally and there's all the fans.
That's right.
And I think it's important not to lose sight of that, but I don't know. I
think about how much it's deteriorated even since we thought it was bad. Like back in, you know, November, we were like, okay, here's the deal. They're losing $54 million in TV revenues this year. Okay, so we're going to see a $30 million cut in payroll. That's what's going to happen. But, you know, at least we're going to be able to have games freely available to everybody, right? Well, then, you know, a few months later, it's like, you're going to lose the $30 million in payroll. The team's going to get worse. Like, we're not going to continue to invest in the team. But we are still going to go back to the crummy TV provider. So you still don't have any sort of you're still not going to be able to stream games in market. Okay. All right. I guess. But, you know, at least we'll get some. No, we're still going to keep the $30 million payroll thing. So again, now you get screwed on both of those. And then now it's gotten to the point where it's like, also, you don't get the TV thing either. You know, you don't get the $30 million. You don't get the in-stream. You can't stream the games. And also you can't watch them on TV now either. So
it's the worst of all worlds, basically. Yeah, at every step along the way, it's gotten worse. And the Twins will sit there and tell you, we were faced with difficult decisions and this was bad for us. And we were pushed in this direction and our choices were limited. And I believe all that. Yeah. It's not a good situation. I mean, we've known that since for the past year. But ultimately,
but you got yours, by the way,
right? You know what I mean? Or at least you were the ones who actively were able to make decisions.
Right. Yeah, right.
The fans just have to sit there and take whatever they're given, and sadly, what they're being given is increasingly bad and increasingly frustrating. And I just think, from a business standpoint, the lengths they're requiring fans to go, and the things they're forcing them to kind of put up with. In the name of just continuing to be fans and to spend money on this team is absolutely absurd. And it speaks to the dominance of sports in American culture that any fans are willing to put up with this and continue to be Twins fans, let alone the thousands and thousands that are. But like, you're making life so difficult on people who all they want to do is consume your product, enjoy your brand, be fanatical about the team that you own and have made billions on.
Pay $8 to $10 a month to a cable company to watch your stuff. Like,
And you're basically saying, you got to do all that, and you're still not even going to really get it. We're still going to just kind of jerk you around here and make you feel stupid for your involvement. So that's where I'm at on this. I think you get what you deserve on some level. And if the Twins find themselves with poorer attendance than expected, and when it comes time next offseason to find a new provider or their own streaming service, or to just try to then come back to these same fans that have been crapped on and say, hey, slate's clean, give us $20 a month to re-up for them.
Right.
They cannot and should not be surprised when the reaction to that is less enthusiastic than they maybe would have hoped. Because, again, decisions have consequences and behavior has consequences. And, fans have brains and fans get frustrated and they can talk and walk with their dollar. And I think that's probably what's going to happen here. So that's where we're at on the payroll front. Well, I'll be at Target Field before this episode is released. So
we'll see.
I better watch my back.
I'll get out there as fast as I can.
In the fifth inning when people are listening to it. I don't want to over dramatize, the level of vitriol coming my way. But I did hear from quite a few people who were like, that was some rant. Okay, so just to finish up here, because I got to head over there. Bounce back. We could have talked a little bit more about Paddock, but a good bounce back start. Let's see him do it again.
Yeah.
A couple notes from the minors. Emmanuel Rodriguez is back to playing at Double A after missing about a week with a hand or wrist injury. Walker Jenkins is still out with a hamstring strain at Low A, which has now been, opening day at Low A, which was maybe 3 weeks.
Right.
Not over a month. Three plus weeks. And not close to returning, but, had a setback, I was told, but not a significant one. I mean, it's still a hamstring strain, basically.
Brooks Lee?
Brooks Lee still in the kind of middle of a two-month process, it sounds like. No meaningful update on him, which is, unfortunate. If we had a healthy Brooks Lee, I honestly think he might be leading the team in at-bats right now if he'd have been healthy. Because he would have first been filling in at third, then he would have been filling in at short. Right now, he'd probably be playing third again.
Right.
He'd have to perform, obviously. But that's it.
If you want to join the Patreon, we should say we're probably going to be doing two podcasts. Monday, we'll be covering the entire Red Sox series, talking about that stuff, I'm guessing. Maybe midweek, something like a mailbag. And then we'll be back, I think, with another free episode on Friday next week, I think is sort of the plan right now. We should be back to pretty much weekly podcasts for at least most of May, I would think.
Okay.
And then things will probably, the free ones will probably have miss a couple in June. So
imagine if John cared about his audience and he just stayed stateside.
It's true. Yeah. Yeah. I got a little window of opportunity here to do some travel. So
you mean
do
just
that.
Like in life before you pass away? Is that
Actually, that is exactly what I mean. Oh, well, like, you're joking, but I'm never going to be healthier than I am right now. I've got some money. I've got some health. Parents have passed. Kids are on their own. Chrissy's parents are healthy. My dog has passed. We got a window here to do some travel, and we're going to go to do things like go to Japan for 3.5 weeks. That's going to continue.
Right. I mean, I was just poking fun at you, John. I wasn't really meaning
that is exactly our mentality right now, Mr. Cleveland.
Me, none of those things are true for me. So I sit at home when I can. My body is gradually falling apart.
Yeah,
so,
how'd that go for you on Thursday?
Oh, not good. I haven't even told you about that. Not good. Not good. Old Aaron, hip, no good. It's about as good as Byron Buxton's knee. Or perhaps worse. Thank you to our sponsors.
That's right. Chops and Game Time and
Harry's Razors and Storyworth.
That's right.
And again, we've been doing some really good stuff on Patreon, whether you like the analytical side, the breaking news side, the curse and profanity filled rants, mailbags, guests. We've had all of the above. And we would love for anybody listening to this to join us on Patreon for a couple of extra episodes a week, commercial free, by the way. It's PATREON, patreon.com/Gleeman. And if not, we'll see you probably a week from now back here. Bye bye.